Hey there, it's Kathy. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to History of the 90s early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. In 1985, two British animators met for pints at a local pub. They were feeling good after wrapping up work on a groundbreaking project. They'd been part of a team that for the first time ever used CGI technology to create an animated music video. And now the two men wondered what they should do next. What they decided to do with this exciting new technology took nearly a decade to come to fruition. And when it did, it altered the course of animation history. I'm Kathy Canzora, and this is History of the 90s, a podcast about a decade that changed the world. In this episode, we travel back to the creation of the world's first fully computer-generated cartoon. This is the story of Reboot. The iconic video for the Dire Straits song Money for Nothing used basic computer-generated images to bring to life the two working-class guys featured in the MTV diss track. The blocky 3D delivery men in overalls are shown installing microwave ovens and custom kitchens, while Mark Knopfler and the rest of the band play on a TV in the background, prompting this famous line by one of the workers.
Oh, that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Get your money for nothing. Get your chicks for free. We got to install a microwave oven.
The song and the video were huge hits at the 1986 MTV Video Music Awards. Money for Nothing was nominated in 11 categories and won two Moon Men, including the big one, Video of the Year, beating out the animated video for the song Take On Me by A-ha. You may remember that one looked like a drawing or a sketch that had come to life. It was made using a technique that had been around since the early days of the 20th century, and it involved animators manually altering film footage one frame at a time. The Money for Nothing video was something totally different, breaking new ground by using computers to create 3D animation. Music video director Steve Barron turned to animators Ian Pearson and Gavin Blair at Rush's post-production in London, England, to bring his vision to life. For the job, they used brand new technology, a Bosch FGS 4000, which was one of the earliest computer graphics systems, along with Paintbox, a program that allowed creators to manipulate color images with a stylus pen. It was very cutting edge. It took 3.5 stress-filled weeks to make the Dire Straits video. And the very night they finished it, the pair went to the pub to have a relaxing drink as a reward for all their hard work. And that's when Ian said to Gavin, "You know, we could do a TV show like that." Gavin thought he was insane. Making the video had almost killed them. But Ian didn't drop the idea, even when they sobered up. So the pair carried on with their day jobs while slowly tinkering with the idea of a CGI show. Jacob Weldon and Raquel Lynn are a BC filmmaking duo making a documentary called Reboot Rewind. They're looking at Ian and Gavin's quest to make the first computer-generated cartoon and the impact it had on film and TV. Jacob says the technology was still fairly primitive, so the pair decided the show should take place inside a personal computer.
Their first sort of concept for the show, the idea of a show taking place inside a computer, that was just sort of the definitive explanation for, like, how do we explain why it looks like blocky, primitive characters and things, right? It's like you say that and everyone just goes, oh yeah, it's set inside a computer. That makes sense. That's why it looks like that.
Ian and Gavin eventually brought in two other animators to join their project, John Grace and Phil Mitchell. And together, the four became collectively known as The Hub. In 1992, 7 years after the first conversation in the pub about a fully CGI animated show, the guys in The Hub had honed their concept enough to shop it around to TV networks in North America. With the help of veteran TV producer Christopher Bruff, they approached Fox Kids and pitched a show they called Reboot. The network was initially interested, but backed off because they just weren't sure about the capabilities of the new CGI technology. You see, up to that point, the longest piece of computer animation ever made was 2.5 minutes long. and The Hub was proposing to deliver 24 minutes a week of full computer animation, which had never been done before. And many believed it couldn't be done, at least not quickly or cheaply. Jacob says it also didn't help that Ian and Gavin were getting a lot of pushback from traditional animators.
The way Gavin put it is that because he talked to a lot of 2D animators and they were worried that the computers were going to replace them. They were worried that the computers were actually doing all the work. And I don't think people realize that it takes a computer animator, a person, to actually do the work. But the computer is just replacing the pencil, essentially.
In the end, ABC decided to take a chance on their show and greenlit a 13-episode season to run on Saturday mornings. In Canada, the show was picked up by YTV. That's when the guys finally quit their day jobs and relocated to Vancouver, British Columbia to start making the show. They set up shop in a suite of rooms at the Granville Island Hotel, bringing with them $800,000 worth of equipment. Jacob Weldon says the FGS machines used for the Dire Straits video were now replaced by Silicon Graphics computers.
And the software was called Softimage, which Softimage was sort of the first like 3D animation program to come along that was designed by someone who was an artist and not like a mathematician. So that was the first time you could really kind of like start playing with organic shapes, kind of like dragging and pulling and a little more resembling what, you know, 3D animation software might look like today.
Softimage was created by a Montreal-based company founded by the late, great Daniel Langlois. At the time, it had begun to proliferate the film industry. Soon it would be used to create 3D effects in movies like Jurassic Park and The Mask. But it had not yet been utilized for an animated TV show. At the Granville Island Hotel, The Hub used Softimage to build 3D models of sets, as well as work out how to make the characters move and talk. It was a mountain of work, but according to Raquel Lynn, by then, the premise of the animated show had been fully fleshed out.
You have sprites who are basically kind of like your humanistic looking, or you've got binomes, which are also sprites in some capacity. But basically, they live inside the city of Mainframe. And Mainframe is basically your what you would think is like your home computer.
The three sprites that are the stars of the show are Bob, Dot Matrix, and her younger, troublemaking brother, Enzo, who has a dog named Frisket. They all live within the computer system world of Mainframe as they work to keep it safe from the viruses known as Megabyte and Hexadecimal. Raquel says Bob is the guardian of Mainframe, protecting its citizens from danger.
So Bob is kind of like your cool guy, cop figure from a big city who comes to Mainframe, which is considered a small town. And he's kind of like your lovable goofball, flies by the seat of his pants.
Dot Matrix is a no-nonsense businesswoman and the opposite of Bob because she's a big planner. But the two make a great team as they battle game cubes, which drop from the sky in Mainframe when the human user of the computer they live inside plays a game.
Warning, incoming game. Warning, incoming game.
Uh-oh, a game. But I'm not worried, Bob. I'm with you, and you're the best.
Hey, you're no hack yourself, Doc. No game can stop a team like us.
Yeah.
If the user wins, the section of Mainframe where the GameCube landed is wiped out, and the sprites and binomes caught in the game become energy-eating slugs. Raquel says the other villains of the show are computer viruses. The first is Megabyte.
He's your very high-class, gentleman type of villain. Of course, he looks big and scary, but he's not like the over-stereotypical like wahaha type of villain. He's more smart. You could probably play a really good game of chess with him.
The other virus is Hexadecimal, Megabyte's sister, also known as the Queen of Chaos.
It's always said that she is more powerful than Megabyte or than anything and anyone, but she just kind of likes to play with things. Like, she's not really out to conquer anything. She's just like the virus that sits in your computer and causes chaos.
Reboot made its television debut in September 1994. And by the time it finally went to air, it looked vastly different from what was originally pitched to the TV networks. That's because the technology was developing super fast. Initially, Bob, the guardian of Mainframe, had jerky movements and a two-dimensional look commonly associated with computer-generated graphics at the time. But by the time the show debuted, Bob was fully three-dimensional with rounded edges and the smooth movements of a human who just happened to be blue. And as the first season progressed, the quality continued to improve. It also got faster to make the show. The reboot team was able to produce two episodes every 6 weeks, compared to the 9 months it took to create the first episode. Reboot was an instant hit with kids in the US and Canada, so much so that a second season was ordered almost right away. In January 1995, the show also began airing in the UK, where it quickly became the number one kids show. In addition, broadcast agreements were signed in 24 countries around the world, including Japan, where it was given a primetime slot. Plus, multiple toy companies had signed licensing agreements to start making everything from Reboot action figures and collector cards to bedsheets and lunchboxes. Bob, Dot, and Enzo were expected to be the next Power Rangers. Raquel Lynn says a show set inside a computer that was filled with computer jargon was a perfect fit for the time.
The early 90s was a very special time when it comes to computers and like home desktop machines. It was like a very exciting and new era for people in the 90s with technology. And so that was kind of already a big starting point. And that was what Chris Bruff and a lot of the marketing material would use for in terms of like, how would you sell this show to kids and to people? It's a show that's set inside a computer. If you're curious about computers, that will take to you.
Beyond the cool concept, Reboot was also really funny, with lots of great storylines. In a 1995 interview, Chris Bruff said that was the key to the show's success. He said, quote, "One of our greatest accomplishments is that we managed to combine cutting-edge technology and the age-old art of storytelling." But the Hub still had some challenges they were dealing with. By now, they had relocated from the Granville Island Hotel to the Vancouver neighborhood of Kitsilano, where they opened Mainframe Studios. They were often frustrated by ABC's Standards and Practices Department, which was constantly asking for changes to the show to make it more kid-friendly. For example, ABC asked that Dot's breasts be altered into a single blob, something that animators nicknamed the Mono Boob. Plus, the Standards and Practices Department informed the creators that guns on the show could only shoot bubbles and not bullets. In response, animators made the guns comically oversized. The reboot team also responded to the constant meddling by the network with a cheeky episode near the end of season one. Episode 11, called Talent Night, features a female binome named Emma C., a program censor who bans nearly every act trying out for a talent show that Dot is organizing for Enzo's birthday. One of the acts that gets the okay to perform is the Small Town Binomes, who are a parody of the Village People. They perform their smash hit single, BSNP, which is a coded acronym for Broadcast Standards and Practices, the department that had been plaguing the reboot team that first season.
Oh, it's fun to play in a non-violent way.
Incidentally, another act that tried out for that talent show bore a striking resemblance to the two blocky delivery men from the Dire Straits video where Ian Pearson and Gavin Blair cut their teeth on CGI technology a decade earlier. Jacob Weldon says that type of humor was pretty typical on the show.
Where there's a lot of hidden humors, a lot of Easter eggs and references to things that they liked, the movies, the TV shows, the video games that they liked. Every episode is kind of packed with like little references, whether it's, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars.
In season two, an episode called Trust No One riffed on The X-Files and featured the voice of Gillian Anderson as a character called Data Nully. And there was another episode called Bad Bob. It's an homage to the dystopian movie franchise Mad Max. Jacob says a concept artist on the reboot team, Brendan McCarthy, was a massive Mad Max fan, and he came up with the idea.
So the story goes, one day, he hands in a stack of drawings for a different unrelated episode, and among these drawings is a drawing of Megabyte as a big semi-truck. And they go, what is this? We didn't ask for this. And he's like, oh, it's cool, right? And they're like, okay, well, we have to do something with this. So from that, they created this episode of Reboot that revolves around this corrupted GameCube that plays this Mad Max game.
And incidentally, after the Bad Bob episode was finished, McCarthy sent a VHS copy of the episode to George Miller, the creator of Mad Max. And that eventually landed McCarthy a job doing the concept art and design on Mad Max Fury Road, released in 2015. By the time season 2 of Reboot launched, there was a shakeup in the television industry that had a major impact on the show's future. In August 1995, the Walt Disney Company acquired ABC, as well as ESPN, for $19 billion. And Disney eliminated any animated shows from ABC's lineup that weren't Disney properties. As a result, Reboot was canceled by the network at the end of the second season. But Reboot wasn't dead yet. Canada's YTV took the reins for season 3, which was expected to be the show's final season. And without ABC in the picture, Reboot creators had a lot more freedom. No longer did they have to conform to the network's standards and practices department. Plus, ABC had insisted that each episode be a standalone story, so viewers could drop in any time and understand what was going on. But Jacob Weldon says during season 3, the show became more serialized and was able to explore new territory.
But it's a little bit more mature with its storytelling, and they're getting even more kind of like creative with their like movie references. They start doing like Evil Dead parodies and Elvira and things like this. Because at that point, YTV was just like, you know what, you guys, I mean, we have some rules in terms of what we can put on TV, but you guys can pretty much do whatever you want.
In 1997, more than 170 employees were working at Mainframe's 50,000 square foot studio space in downtown Vancouver. It certainly was a far cry from those days when animators worked on computer workstations, propped up on little side tables in a suite of rooms at the Granville Island Hotel. A lot of the employees were now pulling 60 and 70 hour work weeks because not only was Mainframe making Reboot, they had also launched a second show called Beasties. Plus, they were involved in developing several IMAX motion simulation rides and a Reboot video game called Countdown to Chaos. Overseeing all of it was Ian Pearson. A sign over his door read Vice Chair and Creative Godfather. But he preferred to think of himself as a benign Jabba the Hutt, a graying father figure guiding the mostly 20-something computer animators, illustrators, and engineers. Even without Reboot on their roster, Mainframe Studios would be just fine, with enough work to keep them more than busy if the show came to an end after season 3, as was expected. In the fall of 1998, Mainframe Studios got a lucky break. The Cartoon Network picked up the third season of Reboot and aired it on its popular Toonami block of programming. Toonami first launched on March 17, 1997, as a weekday afternoon block from 4 to 6 p.m., which Jacob says was a much better fit than Saturday mornings, where ABC originally aired Reboot during its first two seasons.
And for a couple years after season 3 was finished, Toonami would keep replaying. I mean, YTV was, you know, rerunning it here in Canada, but Toonami would rerun it in the U.S. And it picked up a lot of traction. It was like a really popular show for them, and that's what sort of got the ball rolling on a fourth season.
In April 2000, Mainframe Entertainment announced that Reboot would be returning to TV. Ian Pearson said fans never deserted the show, and with another season, creators got to say a great big thank you to those fans. And he said, quote, "Mark my words, they will not be disappointed." Initially, the Cartoon Network ordered 12 episodes, but at the last minute, under pressure from their parent company, Warner Brothers, which didn't want to invest in IP they didn't own, Cartoon Network scaled it back to 8 episodes. By this point, the reboot team had already plotted out a 12-episode storyline, so Jacob says they had a big decision to make.
Do we reorder our story so that we tell the entire full story we wanted to tell in 2/3 of the time, so it's extremely rushed and probably lesser quality? Or do we stick to the original plan and have those 8 episodes sort of as we plan them, and then hang on to hope that we get to do the next batch of episodes and finish the story?
They decided on the latter, airing the 8 episodes as they planned them. But sadly for fans, the rest of the season never got picked up, which meant reboot ended on a cliffhanger that never got resolved.
Megabyte comes back to town after being dealt with in season 3, comes back to Mainframe. He's got all these new shape-shifting powers, and he makes his way into the principal office, which is the central kind of hub building in the middle of Mainframe, and has all the main characters locked in and vows to hunt them all down. Cut to black.
Jacob and his filmmaking partner Raquel Lynn are among the many reboot fans who have never gotten over the sting of that unresolved cliffhanger. And between you and me, I think part of the reason they're making a documentary about reboot is to convince the creators the time has come to give the show a proper ending. In 2006, Mainframe Studios was purchased by Rainmaker, a Vancouver-based visual effects and post-production company. And the next year, Mainframe was renamed Rainmaker Animation. By then, none of the original members of the Hub were still working there. Ian Pearson, Gavin Blair, and Phil Mitchell had moved on to other projects, while John Grace passed away in 2004. Before they left Mainframe, the company had become the world's most prolific producer of CGI animation for TV, making shows like Action Man, Heavy Gear, and Beast Wars Transformers. Plus, they had begun a lucrative partnership with Mattel to create the hugely popular direct-to-DVD animated Barbie movies, a partnership that to date has resulted in over 40 films. In 2018, Rainmaker Animation attempted to satisfy reboot fans still waiting for more of their beloved show, but the attempt fell flat. Reboot The Guardian Code, a live-action CGI hybrid with little connection to the first reboot, aired for 2 seasons on Netflix, and it seems to have been universally despised by the show's original fans. Despite the unresolved cliffhanger and the disappointing Netflix reboot of Reboot, the legacy of what Mainframe Studios accomplished cannot be denied. When The Hub created Reboot, it was the first show with animated characters fully realized in a 3D computer-generated environment. There was quite literally nothing like it. Often, we think of Pixar and DreamWorks as the pioneers of CGI animation, but Mainframe and Reboot came first. Raquel Lynn says that's often forgotten when people are talking about the history of CGI animation. And that's why it was important to her and Jacob to make a documentary about Reboot.
This show inspired a generation of animators and professionals, including ourselves. It was such an incredible show, and honestly, kids back in those days, like, they could recite the opening monologue better than the national anthem. Like, it was in Canada, it was insane. Like, it was just so popular, and it just sent these ripples of inspiration out. And then, of course, coming back, you've got this like wave of professionals working in the industry.
Today, the Vancouver Economic Commission says that over 60 studios in that city are devoted to VFX and animation. And many of the people working in those studios grew up watching Bob, Dot, and Enzo battle computer viruses inside the city of Mainframe. Thanks for listening to this deep dive into Reboot. And thanks so much to Jacob Weldon and Raquel Lynn. As I mentioned, their love of Reboot has led them to create a documentary about it. Reboot Rewind will premiere on TELUS Optik TV Video On Demand and the TELUS Story Hive YouTube channel in mid-2024. I'll put a link to their YouTube channel in my show notes so you can check out the trailer for Reboot Rewind. If you have an idea for History of the 90s, please send me a message through social media or email. I'm on Instagram at That90sPodcast, and the email for the show is 90s@curiouscast.ca. This episode was hosted and written by me, Kathy Kinzora. Our producer is Dila Velasquez, and sound design and final production is by Rob Johnston. See you next time for more History of the 90s.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.